right. Good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live this July the 15th, 2005. July 15th, 2005, we are live in the office here at Pensacola, Florida. DrDino.com is our website, or DinosaurAdventureland.com, either one. And if you have not been to Dinosaur Adventureland, you really need to come. It is the neatest place on planet Earth. I was a high school science teacher for 15 years, and now for 16 years I've been an evangelist doing seminars on creation, evolution, and dinosaurs. And we take the position that the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The Earth is about 6,000 years old. God made it in six normal 24-hour days. And then there was a big flood about 4,400 years ago that totally rearranged the real estate and dropped everybody's property value to zero, unless you had a piece of Noah's Ark, and then you were in good shape. And we teach that dinosaurs lived with man all through history. They were part of the normal creation. Nothing died until Adam sinned. The Bible's real clear about that. Plus, common sense would tell you, if there's a creator, he would have made it perfect, and it's now messed up because of man's disobedience, not because a creator made a world full of suffering and death. I mean, that would be a cruel creator, not a loving God, that's for sure. And the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. That is so fun to say, Jonathan. What is it about me? I enjoy pointing out how dumb this theory really is. Sweetly, of course, in Christian love.
All right.
Okay, a couple of news articles, things to go over, announcements, an urgent prayer request. Missionary Mitchell Benton has been a missionary in Mexico for some time. Graduated from Hiles Anderson College. He drowned last night on a youth activity down there in Mexico. A bunch of the kids were in a river. He got swept away by the current, apparently. They have not found the body yet. I talked to his wife about an hour ago. They have four small children under 10, just had one within the last year. So really pray for the family of Mitchell Benton. We will be putting up something on the website in the next few days. I talked to her, you know, what are the needs, and she doesn't know for sure yet. But if they don't find the body, they will not collect any life insurance, and he did have a small life insurance policy through the military. So pray, I guess, first of all, that the Mexican authorities can find the body, number one. Or I guess there's a remote chance that he's alive and swept downriver, but that is unlikely. But it would be wonderful if that was true. So anyway, Mitchell Benton, pray for the family if you would, and if you'd like to contribute something, get a hold of our ministry. And we're going to be collecting money for them to help them in whatever their needs may be that continue the mission or come out of the country, bring the family back home. Well, I did not remember who she was until I talked to her an hour ago in Mexico, and she said, oh, my kids have been to Dinosaur Adventureland. We love your place. My husband is the one who drove your stuff over from Indiana somewhere. I said, well, I meet, you know, about 500 people a week, but yes, I remember that. So anyway, pray for them if you would. I'd appreciate that. Then, let's see, news articles. But if you want to get a hold of us, you can call our office here, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, or 877-479-DINO. That'll be toll-free. And then go to extension 136, and that'll get you live onto the program here at DrDino.com. You can also AOL Instant Message us at Dr. Dino Live. DrDinoLive.
And you've got to click your little man.
I got to click the little man. Yes. That little guy right there. Okay, I'm clicked. And I'm in. Yay. Okay, so you can get a hold of us. How come when you turn this thing on, Jonathan, they always have some, you know, partially naked woman on the front to... I mean, what's the AOL Instant Message all about anyway?
Well, it's a free program, and the way they actually make their money is by selling advertising space to personal websites and things like that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Tell them, knock it off, okay? All right. Yes. Oh, Valerie. Yeah, sure. Valerie's on the line, wants to transfer in. That would be great. We'll take the call. Oh, let me have that paper, too, Glenda, with the question she was asking. I'll take that. Because I had asked Glenda to call her to see if we could talk about this on the line, about the Colonial Charter School of Minnesota. Yeah, sure, you betcha. Okay, so you can call in the program, 850-479-DINO. We just have one line coming in. Sorry about that. When this call's done, then you can call in. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. And we'll be glad to take that question, questions or comments. Okay. This should be Valerie coming in there. Jonathan, just put her on live when you find her.
Hi, this is Valerie.
Hi, Valerie. Kent Hovind here in Pensacola, Florida.
Hi, Kent.
Hi, I got your message from, let's see, 11 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm a little slow on messages here.
That's okay.
Part of it's because I travel a lot. Part of it's because we had a hurricane.
Yes, that's right.
Part of it's because we're just real busy, and another part of it's because I'm just a slightly disorganized in a few areas. Okay, so anyway, I apologize, but you had written me a letter, and we're live talking on the Internet here, drdino.com, for folks who want to get in on the... So I thought this would be a good one to discuss. Let me just read basically some of what you wrote and see if this summarizes it. You wanted to know what I recommend in the situation. The Colonial Charter School of Minnesota has 119 schools, the public school, one-room schoolhouse setting. They're trying to decrease the number of children in regular public schools.
Yep.
They started these one-room schoolhouses.
Well, what they started doing is charter schooling.
Okay.
Which is basically exactly what it is. It's chartering a new type of school. I know Minnesota, I don't know other states' laws, but Minnesota has opened up open enrollment completely, allowing the private sector to create a public school.
Wow.
It's funded publicly and run privately. Does that make sense?
What kind of restrictions do they put on you? Can you teach Christian curriculum? Or?
We can teach Christian curriculum as long as it's not all day, every day, all year.
That's a big loophole.
It's a big loophole. So they are allowing it. Under the pretenses that, like, we could teach intelligent design in our science curriculum. We can teach Christian theories in a non-preaching manner, but we can't do it in every subject all year long.
Okay. Well, there are lots of good places to get Christian curriculum.
There are lots, but most Christian curriculum is swamped with Christianity, which is sort of a red flag.
Yeah, a little much. Okay.
Yeah, and so we're looking for a Christian curriculum or a curriculum in general that, in a non-threatening way, can present evolution.
Okay, are you familiar with Bob Fry in Minnesota?
Bob Fry.
F-R-E-Y.
Oh, I'm not.
He is in Norwood, which is a Twin City suburb.
Okay.
Let me give you his phone number. He does a lot on schools there in Minnesota and also travels and speaks on creation.
Okay.
Good friend of mine and would certainly be more familiar with Minnesota. His number is 952-467-4474.
Mm-hmm.
His email, Freysci, F-R-E-Y-S-C-I. F-R-E-Y-S-C-I.
At
AOL.com. And Bob is a great guy, friend of mine, been down here many times, heard my seminar many times. He and I swap slides all the time. He is very knowledgeable about Minnesota schools and what's happening and what can be done. And maybe I thought I'd throw that out as some help. Now, there is also a couple of curriculums that are not quite as, aggressive in their Christian approach, you know? And I'm looking them up right now as I speak. Let's see. There is ICR, Institute for Creation Research, ICR.org. They produced a curriculum years ago called, I think it was called Two Views, where they show the creation view and show the evolution view, both, and kind of give, you know, balanced treatment, I guess, to both sides. And, of course, next to creation, evolution looks real stupid. Next to anything, evolution looks stupid. Okay, but it really looks stupid next to truth about creation. But that is, possibly an option of something you could consider. I don't know if that curriculum is still available. I believe it is.
Okay.
There is a lady in North Carolina named Elizabeth Ridenour. Elizabeth Ridenour, let's see, R-I-D-E-N-O-U-R, that has produced a curriculum called... BibleInSchools.net, and they get in lots of public schools, no problem. I mean, like 150 or 200,000 kids take Bible classes
awesome.
Every day, from her material. She's in North Carolina. Let's see, you can call her, 336-272-3799. But it's BibleInSchools.net. Probably the best people to contact about getting textbooks that are less poisonous than others, if you want to use public school textbooks that have as little evolution as possible. What's that?
I was going to say, as far as teaching the evolution goes, we would like to do in many of your videos and DVDs how you give the philosophy of evolution and then give the counter to it. That's the way we want to teach evolution, if taught at all.
Okay, then my video number 4 might be what you'd want to use.
And would it be suitable for younger children?
It depends on how young. Now, I have a video series. I mean, thousands and thousands of teachers use this. I mean, public schools, just as is.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't ask, don't tell, just do it, you know?
Yep.
Okay. Just show them. You know, it's easier to get forgiveness than permission anyway. But textbookreviews.org. Textbookreviews.org is in Longview, Texas. That's Mel Gabler. He died just this year, but their ministry's been going for 40-some years on reviewing textbooks to determine which ones are the least poisonous for, you know, the public school system. You may not find a good one, but you can at least find one that's less poisonous than the rest of them.
Okay.
And there would be no question, because all the books that you know, they have are reviewed, they're approved for public schools. But even then, some are worse than others, you know,
mm-hmm.
as is pretty obvious to anybody that studies textbooks. Let's see. I'm looking through my notes here. On Seminar Part 5, I cover quite a bit of this and flash all this stuff up on the screen. I'll tell you something else you may want to cover in your school there is wallbuilders.com. Wallbuilders.com. That is David Barton's excellent website with tons of good material on the history of our school system. You know, how did we get here? What happened? The Christian history behind our American colonies and the initial school system, how they used the Bible, the blue back speller, you know, I've got stuff from the textbooks and stuff from the 1800s that are amazing because, I mean, they taught the kids how to read right from the Bible.
Yes, they did, and the reason they taught them to read was so that they could read the Bible.
Right. Okay, Ron Johnson writes textbooks for public schools and leaves out any evolution. You can call Ron Johnson, tell him I said hi. His website is PacWorks, PacWorks, PacWorks.com.
Okay.
His phone number is 254-445-4272. There's also one called HighSchoolScience.com. Dr. J. Wiley, W-I-L-E. Writes mostly, I would say, upper-level books. I don't think it'd be appropriate for junior high or grades, maybe junior high, but not grade school. But you could ask them if they have. Apologia Educational Ministries is what they are.
Okay, I've heard of Apologia.
Yes, they produce a lot of curriculum. Their phone number, if you want to call them, is 765-608-3280. And I'll give you a few leads anyway. As far as elementary stuff, though, you know, lower level, first through fourth grade or fifth through eighth grade,
mm-hmm.
I have found many, I'm going to say 300 or more teachers have, you know, used my regular creation seminar in that age group, and the kids loved it. You know, teaching about dinosaurs and creation, just my regular seminar that I share.
I was talking with the director about this, and she was hoping that you would know of, or you would actually be able to create something to the effect of a hands-on sort of something they could insert into their regular science curriculum, like, for example, if they were studying seeds and roots. Maybe something that they could insert into that portion of the curriculum and how, you know, God influences growth or creates whatever, just something to that effect that we could insert, you know, real subtly along,
sure.
Kind of as a supplement to the curriculum. If we get a good curriculum that doesn't pound evolution, is not brainwashing our children, it's acceptable, you know, and we're not sending red flags all over through the Minnesota Department of Education. We could, you know, subtly insert, like you said, don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
These portions of curriculum that would kind of coincide with what we're teaching.
Well, hope that helps. This is our break time. You're welcome to stay on through the break, or if you have any more questions, give us a call.
Thanks,
Robert. All right. Hey, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll be back, folks, right after the break.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, and local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418, that's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio.
Peter Christo is Scott Hogan. Scott came to us searching for a position where he could use his music degree. In January, Scott moves from New Mexico to Wisconsin for the position he found through Inter Christo.
Inter Christo is Dove Christian Academy in Colorado. Dove works with special needs children, and Inter Christo has helped them find two loving teachers for this school year.
Inter Christo is Jim McKenna. Jim and his wife, Chris, are in Thailand right now because of an opportunity they found through Inter Christo. God has definitely used you in our lives for His glory, Jim writes. Through Inter Christo, the McKennas have found three international positions in the past 9 years.
Inter Christo connects Christians with Christian organizations. Log on to intercristo.com and see how we can help you. Inter Christo works with hundreds of Christian organizations worldwide. Head to the website as part of your job search. Look to intercristo.com, the Christian career specialists, and a Christo ministry.
Welcome back, folks, to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live. It's July 15th, 2005. 32 years and a day, Jonathan. Been married a long time. Pretty near life sentence, huh?
That's quite a while.
It's been wonderful.
Oh, but you got so many more years to go.
Oh, yeah. I'm still young yet. You know, I don't feel that old anyway. Okay. But, anyway, you're welcome to call in and be on the program, 850-479-3466, 850-479-3466. Go to extension 136, or if somebody does answer the phone, since a few secretaries are still in there, just say, I'd like to be on the radio, and they'll pass you right on through to extension 136. Or you can instant message us, AOL instant message, Dr. Dino Live. I have several left over from yesterday, as well as a couple articles and some coming in today already, so we'll get to as many as we can. Jonathan, is this one yours, the common virus may help kill cancer?
It sounds familiar.
MSNBC.com. Common virus that is harmless to people can destroy cancer cells in the body and might be developed into new cancer therapy, U.S. researchers said Tuesday. The virus, called big name, infects an estimated 80% of the population. Our results suggest that adeno-associated virus type 2 which infects the majority of the population but has no known ill effects, kills multiple types of cancer cells, yet has no effect on healthy cells. Now, Jonathan, this is interesting. You know, evolutionists have often said, how or why would viruses be in a world created by a wise creator?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if the viruses are only harmful to harmful cells?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. It would make complete sense.
Sure. Makes sense. Kill the bad guys, and that's all it does. By the way, as far as killing cancer, there are all kinds of things that kill cancer cells besides the chemo and the burnings and cuttings and surgery and stuff that they have to do to pay for the doctor's Mercedes. I mean, there are nutritional cures. Lots of different people have been cured from cancer with a whole host of nutritional-type cures. Go to our website, Dr. Dino. Go to the links page and check on, click on cancer, Jonathan, or health, I guess.
Yeah, well, cancer and health are both together.
Both together, okay. And there are how many links on there for probably 10, 15, 20?
Yeah, I wouldn't say 20, but around probably 10, 12 for the cancer one.
Sure. So you can study. There's a ton of stuff on the Internet about that. Okay, CNN.com had an article here, T-Rex bird-like respiratory system. The T-Rex had a respiratory system like a bird. Boy, these guys are so desperate to make dinosaurs turn to birds. Satan has got to be laughing his head off at the people who are so dumb as to believe dinosaurs turn to birds. Think about it. I mean, do you really honestly believe a dinosaur can turn to a bird? How many changes would have to be made? Respiratory system.
There was a list once, I believe. It's just innumerable. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling how many changes would have to be made.
Well,
is the respiratory system, they got to turn the pelvic, completely around.
There's sure.
So many different things they have to do.
The brain, the whole muscular system for flying instead of running, I mean, that's very, very different. The nervous system. And it says it had a bird-like respiratory system.
Takes air in.
And what is bird-like? You know, skateboards have truck-like tires. You know, they're round.
That's two axles.
And two axles, yeah. And let's see. Surfboards have, airplane-like curves. That proves something to somebody somewhere. How dumb can they be as to see these ridiculous, make conclusions from such a tiny little bit of information? I don't believe it. Now, my secretary just handed me a note a minute ago, and I lost it already in the piling system here. Here it is. No, we did this one. Global warming makes sea less salty. Didn't we do that one time, Jonathan? News article. Global warming is going to make the sea less salty because more water is flowing into the oceans. Well, duh. Okay. Here we go. Instant messages. Dr. Dino. .com, drdino.com. Salt on eggs 11 writes in, please explain how secular history that shows major civilizations and languages before the flood and the Tower of Babel. Well, a couple of things there. I think Noah's children lived through the flood, and of course they may have kept a history of pre-flood civilizations. I'm not sure exactly what all they carried on that ark, but there may have been a variety of civilizations. Number two, I think that the oldest reliable historical records go back about 2200 B.C. I think you'd have a hard time going any further than that. I would not trust the Egyptian calendar any farther than I could throw a semi because it's greatly exaggerated. That's been proven in the research by Corville. You can go to Evolution Cruncher, which is a great book. Don't they have a website, Jonathan? Do you know that one?
Evolution Cruncher?
Yeah.
I believe it's evolutioncruncher.com.
Evolution Cruncher is a book. It's a 900-page book. You can get it for $5. Call our office or go to our website, drdino.com, and order a bunch of those for every high school kid you know. There's a whole section in there about the Egyptian calendar, how it's not to be trusted. But I cover this question on...
Well, for people who want to check out that book online, it's evolution-facts.org. So it's evolution-facts.org.
Evolution-facts. Okay. As far as calendars, I cover this in Seminar Part 1 if they want to watch. They can see that one right online, can't they?
Yep.
The award-winning video series, of which we have produced about think, 1.3 million of them now in several languages. So if you want to, what happened to my PowerPoint guy here? There, got it. Okay. What was the question again? Population? No. I got to the wrong slide, Jonathan. Want to know about, oh, secular history. Okay, good. See? You'll get old and senile one day, and we will laugh at you. Oldest calendars. Here we go. This is from Seminar Part 1. National Pornographic, Geographic, ran an article August of 99 on page 113 talking about the origin of major writing systems. And they say the Chinese, the Indus Valley, the Egyptian, the Levantine, the Mesopotamian, and the Mayan are the oldest writing systems in the world. And they are from 2800 to 1900 B.C. They have Mesopotamian cuneiform from 3000 B.C. to 75 A.D. The oldest languages are about 5,000 years old, according to World Book Encyclopedia. Says the oldest, this I'm reading here from The Biological Nature of Man by G.G. Simpson, George Gaylord Simpson, in Science Magazine, Volume 152, back in 1966. G.G. Simpson said, and I quote, "The oldest language that can be reasonably be reconstructed is already modern, sophisticated, complete from an evolutionary point of view." Well, if the oldest languages are 5,000 years old and they're already modern, sophisticated, and complete, that ought to raise a few flags somewhere with somebody, you know. Did man evolve from grunts and groans of animals into language, or was language given to the initial couple, Adam and Eve, and then Noah and the family after the flood spoke very complex language, and then their descendants started to build a tower to heaven, and God confused the languages into probably 75 basic languages, which have now been further subdivided into who knows how many dialects, including hillbilly and, you know, Cajun and Bronx and, you know, Maine and, you know, lots of different varieties of English. So the oldest languages are about 5,000 years old. The Chinese calendar says that the year 2000 was the year 4700, which is fitting in fine with the biblical view that 4,400 years ago there was a worldwide flood. Now, of course, the Chinese calendar teach that they started with Fuhai. The Chinese legend says that Fuhai, F-U-H-I, is the father of the Chinese civilization, and that he survived a great flood with his wife and three sons and three daughters on a huge boat full of animals. That's what the Chinese legend says. So if 4,700, of course, is more than 4,400 date for the flood, of course, they may have started with Fuhai's birth, which would have been before the flood, or with Shem, Ham, or Japheth, one of those boys. I don't know. Anyway, there's an article on this about an article on calendars at the Creation Magazine, February 2000 issue. February 2000, Creation, and that's available on answersingenesis.org. Here on the History Channel, a few months ago, they ran a special on capital punishment. And they said, the oldest recorded example of capital punishment is from 18th century B.C., which is 3,800 years ago. Well, the Bible says 4,400 years ago there was a flood, and that destroyed the world. And so eight people survived. And I think the oldest capital punishment fits real good with the Bible. So anyway, don't trust the Egyptian calendar, but the rest of them all fit in just fine. Okay, we'll be back after the break, folks. Dr. Dino Live.
When I was a boy, I used to love the three-legged race.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
Our family had picnics every summer, and we played all kinds of games together. In fact, one of our favorites was the three-legged race. Now, the race was hard enough when everyone was facing the same direction, but in our case, we had one person face backward while the other person faced forward. The forward-facing participant would half-drag, half-carry his backward-facing teammate toward the finish line. A marriage can be like the three-legged race. You can both face the same direction and run in step with one another, or you can run in different directions. That leads to pain, difficulty, and isolation. What about you and your mate? What about the race you're running? Today, pray that God will point you as a couple in the right direction as He sets the pace for your race.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
We are not arrogant enough to call Truth Radio the home of the truth, because the home of the truth is up there with the Lord in heaven. But www.truthradio.com is a reliable place to find information you won't find elsewhere. Stay tuned. Let me ask you, would you go to a fast food restaurant for filet mignon and lobster? Then why do you bother going to a politician for a solution to your problems based upon morality? Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I read that in a letter to the editor, and I think it was worth passing on. And I would like to challenge your thinking to spend less time pleading with your congresspeople and more time getting people, your friends and others, to listen to Truth Radio. We need to build the audience for Truth Radio, and you can help through your emails, a brief reference to Truth Radio, through your conversations with friends, handing out little cards with Truth Radio mentioned. We appreciate all the help you can give. Thank you for listening, and bring along others with you.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. You can get a hold of us live this July 15th of 2005 by calling 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or 877-479-DINO, extension 136, and we'll be glad to take your calls or comments on the subject of creation, evolution, or dinosaurs. We believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. No idea could possibly be more dumb as to teach everything came from a rock which came from nothing, which is exactly what evolution teaches. If you boil away the fluff and the feathers and all the big words they try to hide behind, that's what it says. Grandpa was a rock. And after that it was SpongeBob, right, Jonathan? Yeah. It was, what's that, Nature Magazine or Discover Magazine just a few months ago? Says, this is your ancestor, and it points to a sponge, you know, a sea sponge. Wow. You'd have to have help to be that dumb. I don't believe you could possibly do it on your own. Here we go. And one more article on the last question we were given about oldest languages. The Hebrew calendar, it's the year 2000 was 5760, I believe. Now, the Jewish calendar is from the work of Rabbi Yosei ben Halafta. He died in A.D. 160. He deliberately left out 164 years from the Hebrew calendar to make the prophecy of Daniel 9:25 point to a Hebrew priest named Simon Bar Kokhba instead of Jesus, because it was so clear that Daniel 9:25 prophecy pointed to Jesus, and this Jewish rabbi, Yosei ben Halafta, was all upset about that, so when he made up the Jewish calendar, he changed it so it wouldn't point to Jesus. The Annals of the World is a great book available from our ministry for $65. It's huge. It's by, who did that, Jonathan? Annals of the World, famous chronographer. What? Bishop Usher. Right. In Appendix G of that book, which is probably, 2 inches thick, is a whole section about the different calendars and how to show, you know, the age of the Earth. So I don't forget who asked the question now on instant messages, but you may want to check out that one. Anyway, 164 years was left out, which would put the date at 5924, 5 years ago. So about 5930, according to the Jewish calendar, we're only 70 years from the year 6000. Now, who knows what other dates were left out, and who knows if this Rabbi Yosei ben Halafta was right. But it's an interesting point that the oldest calendars point to either the flood 4,400 years ago or the creation 6,000 years ago. Now, if you read a book by Bill Cooper, the book is called After the Flood. Bill Cooper in England did a great job of analyzing the genealogies and tracing everything back to very interesting conclusions. For instance, the Norwegians have a list of kings. They call it the King List, and sort of the Danes, which is where the Beowulf story comes from, their list goes back to Noah. The Saxons in England had a genealogy dating back to Adam. They traced their genealogy all the way back to Adam and Eve. And the dates are similar to what the Bible says. Okay, Evolution Cruncher on page 49 has a big article about the Egyptian calendar, Egyptian King List. It's not to be trusted because there were several times when there were multiple kings in multiple pharaohs, you know, in Egypt, but they ended up listed in chronological order as if they're all pharaoh at the, you know, in sequence, when actually they're competition or you know, a feud or civil war or whatever's going on. Bottom line is they're pharaoh at the same time, and ended up in the chronology book as stretched out more than that. Okay, let me find SpongeBob here. Where was that, Jonathan? In seminar part one, where we cover, let's see, ancestor was a sea sponge. That was hilarious when you handed me that one, Jonathan. That one, what is it about SpongeBob that everybody likes? Here it is. That everybody likes, anyway. Well, a little dumb. I think I've only watched a few minutes of it. Said, "Man, I got other things to do than this." November 2004, Discover Magazine says on page 64, there's a picture of a big arrow pointing to a sea sponge, and it says, "This is your ancestor." Let's see. Let me read some of the article here, and we'll get on to the rest of the instant messages here. Draw a line back through time from today's person, panda, porpoise, pelican, or perch, and it ought to end with their earliest progenitor. In the midst of the ancient past, a single organism must have given rise to us all. But that raises an interesting question. Where did this animal come from? What did it look like? And what are its nearest living relatives? To understand what the first animals looked like, Michael Sagan, an evolutionary microbiologist at Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, took advanced automated DNA technology and computing power to trace the molecular evolution of dozens of today's oldest known species, jellyfish, sea anemone, sponges, mollusks, starfish, back to their common point of origin. When he grouped the species in the precise order of their appearance on Earth, from less complex to more complex, he landed on sponges. Yep. Sponges are everybody's ancestor, Jonathan. I mean, that's proof right there. The computer told him. And you know, computers never lie.
Of course not. No, no.
Why would a computer lie to us? You know,
Garbage in, garbage out. I believe it's the popular term they use.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. G-I-G-O. All right, here we go. Instant message from Navy Copies Shark Skin. Who's that from? Just, don't know. Yahoo News, looks like today. Article by Robert Roy Britt, who says, fake shark skin could make Navy fleet faster. Few creatures spawn more fear than sharks, but these complex fish also have provided inspiration for several useful technologies. One new idea has captured the interest of the U.S. Navy. Shark skin has been used by many cultures as sandpaper. It's kept shipmates safe in slippery when wet conditions. Swimsuits modeled on shark skin are said by Speedo to reduce drag up to 4%. Now research by two separate groups could lead to synthetic shark skin that would make ships and submarines faster, less expensive to operate. If the research pans out, submarines, already stealthy and shark-like, could become even more so. The problem, the growth of barnacles, mussels, algae, and other organisms add to fuel costs for the military and shipping, increasing drag by 15%. It's called biofouling. The Navy spends $600 million each year to power ships and submarines. At least $50 million of that cost is directly related to biofouling, said Navy scientist Stephen McGalvany. Paint laced with deadly biocides curb the problem, but they're also toxic to other marine life. Goes on talking about some fish and also whales are fouled by hitchhiking marine life, but not sharks. Scientists have figured out that the secret to clean shark is the complex design of their scales. Shark scales, says amazing scales. Shark scales are made of a hard material called dentin. Basically, the scales are tiny teeth. They all point backward, so a shark would feel smooth if you dared to stroke it head to tail, but rough if you ran your hand the other way. Studies have found that the scales act as armor for a shark and also create tiny vortices that reduce drag to make them faster. The scales also allow sharks to swim silently compared to other fish that generate considerable noise when they fly by the water. The design has proved useful to humans in many ways. Norwegians applied real shark skin to the soles of their boots to prevent slippage on wet ship decks. In the 2000 Olympics, swimmers began wearing full-body suits modeled on shark skin. What's good for the shark? Importantly, shark scales flex individually, constantly changing and limiting the amount of exposed surface on which organisms can attach.
So what they're saying is these sharks are incredibly complex and well-designed.
Well, see, it took millions of years for this to happen, though, John. You've got to understand, okay, for millions of years, they all died. None of them survived. Until finally one of them figured it out. You know, if only we put on some new clothes, we'll make it. And so they did it. I mean, after all, they're here. That's proof it happened, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I have not read that article just until, you know, the only thing I've heard of is what you just now read, and that's pretty amazing. You know, their scales are made out of dentin, which, from my knowledge, is also in our teeth, too. It's one of the most strongest, you know, things in our bodies. I mean, that's got to prove that we came from sharks, obviously, if our teeth evolved from shark scales. Yeah.
Well, and you figure a shark's brain, you know, about the size of a walnut or a small peach.
Yeah.
So for that little tiny brain to be able to figure this out, how to make these scales, you got to admit, that's amazing. It took billions of years. Okay. Well, if you want to believe in that, you go ahead. But you're going to feel real dumb judgment day when God says, you numbskull, why did you believe such a thing? Okay? I gave you my word. I gave you my creation. You can look around and see incredible complexity. I mean, even a screw could not evolve by itself. Okay? You're never going to dig through an iron ore deposit and find a naturally occurring screw or bolt or nut or nail. And that's so simple compared to a cell or an organism. That's why they need us, Jonathan. We got to help them. Here we go. Monkey Key 88. Question for Kent. Why didn't God just create all animals, including humans, to be herbivorous, you know, eat herbs, and build in instincts to keep the populations in check instead of using carnivores to balance out populations? Oh, I think the question has a built-in assumption that is false here. Why didn't God create animals, including humans, to be herbivores with built-in instincts to keep the population in check instead of using carnivores to balance the population? Well, it is true that today the population is frequently balanced by carnivores. If there are too many bunny rabbits produced, well, the wolves eat them, okay? And if there's plenty of food, then there's more wolves because the more babies survive. And then the bunny rabbits get eaten, and pretty soon there's not enough food, and so some of the wolves die. And then, oh, wow, more baby bunny rabbits survive because there aren't as many wolves. So, yeah, there is a natural predator-prey balance that has evolved, if you want to use that word, over the years. And there's no question that happens in nature, okay? No question at all. Now, the question would be, is that the way God originally did it? And I would say no. The Bible says very clearly in Genesis chapter 1 that God created everything. Genesis 1, 29 and 30, God created everything to be vegetarian, herbivores. all the animals ate plants, all the people ate plants in the original creation. Exactly when that changed, I don't know how you can possibly tell, but it appears that there are two basic options. One is that the change came at the fall of man, you know, when man disobeyed God and, you know, disobeyed him in all kinds of areas, probably. So that would include, I guess, the diet. We would think that might include something like that. So the other option is that it came after the flood, when God said in Genesis 9, God said to Noah, go ahead and, you know, have a bunch of kids. And he said, the animals are going to be afraid of you now, and it's okay to eat the animals. So read Genesis chapter 9. We cover all that on video number 2 about the changes after the flood. Hope that helps. So I think your question, if you stop and look at it, assumes that God created the carnivore, herbivore, you know, predator-prey relationship, which is not, it's not a correct assumption. All right. So here we go. It says, Jonathan, I'm trying to click on New Scientist. It's asking me, do I want to open or save this file? I guess just open it, huh? Wow. Some kind of big PDF downloading. That was quick. There we go. A Skeptic's Guide to Intelligent Design. So where did this one come from, Jonathan?
It's just an article that was on New Scientist. I'm trying to find some interesting things here to pass on through.
Okay. It's pointing to California. The Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center in San Diego has set up 8 local centers over the course of the school year. Missouri, Oregon, Virginia, there are 2 of them, California, New York, Illinois, North Carolina. And Grand Canyon National Park in 2003, a book entitled Grand Canyon, A Different View, which says the Grand Canyon was formed during Noah's flood, goes on sale in shops in the national park, and it's still on sale there. Can you believe it? They probably have 500 different evolution books on the canyon, but they would dare to have a creation book. I went to a library one time, some big university, I forget where I was. I think it was in Columbus, Ohio, if I recall. And I had a couple hours between, you know, sessions I was speaking up there. And so I went to the university library, and I looked to see how many books they have on evolution and how many books they have on creation. I typed in a variety of different things in their little Erica search program in their computer, and they had, I believe, 1,800 or so books about evolution. Then I typed in creation and found about 20 references and looked at them, and all of them were anti-creationist books. They were still evolution books, you know, blasting creation. None of them presented properly the creation side or gave any credence to creation. So I typed in some of the major authors on creation, you know, Henry Morris, Dwayne Gish, and said, you know, Gary Parker. Blank, zero, no books in this giant library. This is a major university. So I went to the librarian. I said, I don't understand. Why are there 1,800 books about evolution and no books about creation? And she said, oh, we have a book in here about creation. I put it in here myself. It's from my church, the Watchtower Society. Oh, gee whiz. We have one Jehovah's Witness book about creation, 1,800 books about evolution, and the one Jehovah's Witness book teaches the earth is millions of years old. You know? And plus, they're wrong on hundreds of other things. Jehovah's Witnesses are. How on earth can you call this, how do you say you're getting education at a place like this? You're not getting a liberal education. You're getting indoctrinated, for heaven's sake. That's not a education. They need to get their money back. Here we go, A Skeptic's Guide to Intelligent Design. Let me read some of this article here. Bob Holmes and James Randerson. Do you know either of those names, Jonathan?
No idea who either of them are.
Okay. Advocates of intelligent design argue that it deserves to be taken seriously as a rigorous scientific alternative to evolution by natural selection. But just what is it? And is it science at all? Intelligent design, ID, is more sophisticated than its predecessor, creation science, which sought to gather scientific evidence in support of the scientific creation story, of the Christian creation story. By starting from a preconceived conclusion and selectively using evidence to back it up, creation science was clearly unscientific. ID is different. Its supporters argue that we can use science to find evidence of a designer's handiwork in nature, while claiming to be agnostic about exactly who the designer is. Often people think the designer is the big guy in the sky, but it doesn't have to be that at all, says William Dembski. Says William Dembski, a mathematician. Let's see. Philosopher and leading ID proponent affiliated with the Discovery Institute, a think tank in Seattle. He describes ID as a scientific program that leads to an understanding of a generic supernatural intelligence. Like many creation scientists, ID advocates are happy to accept a small role for natural selection, for example, in the evolution of antibiotic resistance. Unlike creation scientists, many of them are also willing to accept that all organisms come from a common ancestor. But that's where advocates of ID, and this is from New Scientist, July 9th of 05, and Darwinism Part Company. The difference, says Michael Behe, a biochemist at Lehigh University at Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, is a leading proponent of ID, quote, is that Darwinism postulates random mutations and natural selection. But these folks apparently represent that people believe there might be an intelligent designer, huh? Well, all right. We'll be back, folks, right after the break. Stay with us.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
So there you were in first grade, finger painting. What a curious urge swept over you. When no one was looking, you mixed a little blue paint with the red. What a color. What a discovery. That same feeling of wonder is what you'll find at BibleDiscovery.org. It's where you'll find Bible study tools custom fit for you. Whether you're a beginner or advanced student, there's something just for you. Flexible study plans and online helps empower you to study the Bible at your own pace, at your own place. So if you'd like more confidence in your Bible study skills, if you'd like to understand how the Bible fits together, go to BibleDiscovery.org. No limitations, no deadlines. We've thought of everything, including a free sample lesson and printer-friendly courses so you don't have to work online. It's all at BibleDiscovery.org. Start mixing it up today at BibleDiscovery.org.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July 15th of 2005. And we love saying it. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. God, the final judge of this world, is the one who created it all. And we're all going to stand before him one of these days. And it's going to be really embarrassing if you haven't done what he said. And we believe the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of humanity. I'm reading an article here from New Scientist magazine, July 9th of 05, just last week, about Skeptics' Guide to Intelligent Design. And they're talking about how dangerous this creationist view is. You know, the sky is falling, Jonathan. I mean, here they have a chart showing the number of people who believe in God created humans in their present form in the last 10,000 years, and it's up near 50% consistently. The black line shows human beings have developed over millions of years from less advanced forms, but God guided the process, and that number's up between the 35 and 40% range. And we evolved over millions of years, and God had no part in the process. That is down around the 10% range. 10% of the population believes this fairy tale being taught to our kids. 90% does not believe it. Why are we all paying for this minority view to be taught? I mean, why don't they go start a private school and teach their minority view to those who wish to pay and come learn it?
I guess it's probably that 10% that a lot of those guys are in kind of the positions to make big political decisions. And so it's 10% is kind of inconvenient for those who are really seeking to learn true science.
See, if you look at the Cold War reconstruction of the American science textbooks in 1959 to 63, in 59, Eisenhower asked Congress for $1 billion to rewrite the science curriculum in America to include more evolution so we could catch up with the Soviets in the Cold War. But if you would have done the same survey back in the 1950s or 60s, the number of people who believed in evolution would be down somewhere around 2%.
But it's amazing. I mean, even amidst all this indoctrination, all the money being put forth, you know, to universities to just pound this relentlessly into the mind of students, it is still the position that God created us, you know, in the last 10,000 years is still, you know, maintaining its stance. I mean, 50% consistently at least. I've heard, you know, polls that have said upwards of 60, 65%. You know, it's just the idea that this is staying that way is just amazing. I mean, you can't buy out common sense.
Well, see, and the evolutionist response is, well, we need to throw more money at it. We need to teach more evolution.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to get a theory that makes sense, okay? I think they're assuming people who don't believe like them are dumb, when actually people who don't believe like them are smart. And they're able to see through this. Okay, we got a caller on the phone, or should I go on here with this article?
Oh, yep, we do have a caller. I completely forgot about it, too. We got Jared on the phone.
Jared, the same Jared that's going to end up being our third person on the program one of these days, right?
Not that Jared.
Jared is the third person on the program today.
Oh, today is. Yeah. Go ahead, Jared. How can we help you?
That's true for the moment, yeah. Okay, so actually, I want to give a quick little comment to what you were just talking about.
Okay.
What percentage of the population in America believes in astrology, do you think?
Oh, very small.
You know, like, give me a percent just for sake of conversation.
Say 10% or less.
Less than 10%?
Believes that the stars affect their life, you mean?
Stars, planets, moons.
Sure, yeah, the position, you know, if you're born under Aries or, you know, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do you think it's a violation of some principle that we should be adhering to that this view is not taught in public schools, even though...
Well, I think probably astrology is addressed in public schools as one of many religions, and you know, teachers will say, I've got science textbooks here where when you get into astronomy, they often mention astrology, and they say there are a small percentage of the population that believes, you know, the stars affect your life. You know,
I'm not aware of any astronomy professor that would ever teach about it. Maybe they do, I don't know.
It's kind of a passing comment generally, like, wow, what a dumb idea this is. And I think that's how evolution should be approached, too. You know, a small percentage of the population believes they came from a rock, but ha, 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 they're dumb. Let's go on to real science. You know, that would be my approach.
In America, you mean, because, like I said before, worldwide people believe in evolution far more
than that is not true. There are many countries that just laugh at the evolution theory. There are some countries where it is taught very strongly, but there's a large creation movement in many countries around the world. I've spoken in 37 countries.
Okay, well, I don't have any hard numbers for you. I have to get some statistics on
sure.
that. But let's just suppose that 90% of the population did believe in astrology. Do you think, then, that it would make it okay to teach astrology in public schools?
Well, are you saying, then, that if 90% believe something, the 10% still have the right to demand that only their minority view be ruling because they have some kind of special knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. If 90% believe in something, maybe there would be a reason they believe in it, and it should be considered.
You know, a long time ago, 90% of the world population thought that the world was flat.
That is not correct. There has never been a time...
You don't think there was never a time in history when that was true?
There is never a time in history when the majority thought the world was flat. There have always been a few numbskulls who thought it was flat. But, you know, the Bible clearly teaches it's round. In the book of Isaiah, written, you know, about 1,000 B.C., the Christians have known it was round. The Hebrews have always known it was round. I think nearly every culture knew it was round. The Egyptians certainly did. They even measured the radius of it.
Okay. How about people in Norway who thought that Thor controlled, you know, thunder and lightning?
Oh, there have always been strange superstitions within cultures, but that doesn't mean they're wrong on everything. Yeah, it's true that some of the Norwegians, I don't know if they all believed it, you know. There have always been cultures. Either today there are thousands of cultures that believe a few strange things. You know, like if you cut somebody's head off and eat his brains, you receive his spirit or things like that. So
It doesn't seem like you're really giving me a effective answer to the question.
Well, phrase your question one more time then.
If 90% of the population believes in something, does that mean that it should be taught in public school?
Well, that would raise the other question of who decides what's taught in public schools.
Yeah, who do you think should decide?
Well, who controls them? That raises the bigger question of who are children responsible to ultimately? Who are they entrusted to? Do children belong to government and the government decides, or do children belong to parents and parents decide? Or do children belong to God and entrusted to parents and God decides? So I think probably your philosophy would be that the government should decide what's best for the children, which of course is the socialist philosophy, as opposed to the Christian philosophy, which says, no, parents decide. And if 90% of the population believes they want their kids taught something, that's what they should be taught. It's not your decision to decide what my kids learn.
I'm not really talking about my own personal perspective, the one that should be the case. I'm just asking you, do you think that that is the way that we should
organize
the school system?
It's a false analogy because 90% of the population does not believe in astrology. So
if they did, it's a hypothetical situation.
Sure. If they did, then that probably should be taught. And that you'll see that's the case now through history where things are taught just because the majority believe. And that's where that gives rise to good scientists to come up and say, wait, let's challenge this majority view. The Earth does not go, and the sun does not go around the Earth. Let's challenge this. That's what our program is for. We're challenging this view. You did not come from a rock. I'm sorry, rocks, plural, male and female, red and blue, pink and blue.
Well, I got you to admit what I wanted you to admit, so I guess I'm done with that topic. I mean, that's really the crux of the issue. Do you think the majority should decide what people learn in education?
Well, I think parents should decide what they want their children taught, okay? If you're in a country that is all Catholic and they all get together and say, we want our kids taught the Catholicism, that's probably the way it should be.
Well,
now,
it's coming.
Should it be mandatory or should there be some tolerance? Like in Muslim countries, you only teach Islam. That's the way it is. And if somebody says, hey, can we teach anything else? No, and we're going to go hang you up by your hands and, cut off your legs. That goes over the line, certainly.
Yeah, so, like in these Muslim countries, they are indoctrinated with something that you think is blatantly false and pretty stupid, right?
Correct. I think Islam has some really stupid things they believe, yes.
So what do you do about that? You try to influence them in a grassroots kind of way? You don't think it's appropriate to do it from a top-down way?
Well, I think you should do it from top-down and bottom-up and middle-out, I think like the creation movement is attacking the evolution religion from the top-down and from the bottom-up and from the middle. We reach people at the grassroots by the tens of thousands. We reach teachers kind of in the middle, and we reach some legislation at the top. So I think we have a pretty effective approach, and I think most evolutionists, even yourself, would have to admit the creation movement looks pretty threatening.
I don't know if it's threatening. I mean, it's kind of scary just because of the possibility, but I'm not sure how it. I mean, I don't think that it's ever going to destroy real science. So
are you assuming there that evolution is real science?
Yeah.
Oh, I know that's part of your assumption.
I'm not assuming that. I mean, it's pretty self-evident that it is.
It's self-evident that evolution is real science. Well, I guess you would need to define, what you mean by evolution and what you mean by science before we could continue that line of thought.
Theory of evolution being the theory that says that biological organisms have arisen through a process involving mutation, natural selection, beginning with a single cell because abiogenesis is not considered part of this theory.
Okay, well, I would agree with the first part of your definition. I think organisms today are here as a result of variations over time. Mutations have happened, and variations have happened.
And they all descended from their ancestors.
But, yeah, they descended from their ancestors, but that does not, instead of a tree all going back to one single cell, it's more like an orchard where all the dogs go back to dogs, and all the cats go back to cats, and all the bananas go back to bananas, but your imagination kicked in there the last half of your statement, okay, when you said it had a single-celled organism as your ancestor. That's where you really jumped out of science into religion.
I'm just explaining what the theory says, but I don't think that's religion.
Well, it's something you believe in, but there's no evidence for that. Are there still single-celled organisms alive today?
Yep.
Like bazillions of them, right?
But this is interesting because when I asked you before what evidence that you would want to, or what you'd expect to be seen in evolution were true, you said that you would expect to see intermediate forms in nature.
Correct.
So aren't you contradicting yourself right now?
No, I don't know of any intermediate forms.
Advanced bacteria, I think, would count as intermediate forms.
They're still alive. How can they be intermediate? Between what?
Yeah, because the original single-celled organisms that we supposedly evolved from would not be as advanced as the single-celled organisms we have today.
Also, the single-celled organisms billions of years ago were dumber than the ones today, or less?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you agree that that you have two options then? You have to have... Let me give you the two possible options and tell me if there's a third I'm missing here. Single-celled organisms, i.e., let's take amoeba just as an example. Maybe that was the first organism. In order to evolve to multi-celled organisms, such as, you know, humans with 50 trillion cells, or even, you know, Volvox with, you know, 100 cells,
yeah,
they would have to either go from 1 to 2 or from 1 to, you know, hundreds or thousands. And would you agree that there are no known two-celled or three-celled or four-celled organisms on the planet?
I think that's the case, but, and this is an extremely good question, but this is not really challenging the theory.
Okay, so you would say it did not evolve then from one-celled to two-celled?
It doesn't seem very likely, but it's
okay.
Possible. I just don't know.
So it went from one to a whole bunch?
It could have gone from one, two to a big colony cluster that mixed in its DNA and then started differentiating parts of it into other...
Okay.
Specialized uses.
Are there any colonies of cells today that are all individual single, you know, could live on their own, but work together as a colony, that do anything similar to complex organisms, i.e., does the colony reproduce the colony, or do individual cells reproduce individual cells?
Individual cells in your body reproduce individual cells.
No. One cell for me and one cell for my wife can produce a whole colony called a human baby. You know,
only a germline cell.
But see, that grows then into not just a colony, that grows into a living human being.
Yeah, that's for a different. That's a totally different thing, though. I'm just saying, like, the cells that are in your body right now are only capable, unless you really modify them, of replicating the same type of cell. Like a liver cell is going to produce a liver cell.
I know, that's pretty amazing, and except for stem cells. Now they're able to produce quite a variety.
Right, because they're undifferentiated.
Right. So, and even those would have, I would think, a difficult time evolving. Okay, so you would agree then that there are no two-celled organisms on the planet, and none have been discovered in the fossil record?
None that I know of, no.
None that I know of either, and I've asked all kinds of people about this, and nobody knows of any. So you have to jump from one to a colony that somehow learned to work together.
That seems likely, yeah.
Okay. And then this colony becomes, very different from a colony, is a living organism. I mean, it's very, the jump from a colony of cells to a living organism is massive, orders of magnitude beyond comprehension.
Yes, but that probably wasn't a jump. That was probably a very, very gradual process.
Okay. What evidence do you have for that?
I'll have to look up on that for you. I think this would probably all have taken place in the Precambrian, in the edge of the Cambrian.
Right.
Where we saw the arthropods and things.
Which does not exist, obviously, you know, by my thinking. But no such thing as Cambrian or Precambrian or any of that stuff. You're making up the whole story.
What's wrong with defining Cambrian the way that they define it with the index fossils? Why don't you mind that being identified that way, despite the age, I mean?
How would you know a rock is Cambrian?
I'm just saying, what's wrong with defining it to be a layer that has certain index fossils?
I would agree that certain layers appear to have certain types of fossils, but there are other ways to explain that besides, you know, time and chance and evolution.
Yeah, I know. I'm giving you that. I'm saying, like, you can call whatever age you want. You can say it's all 6,000 years old. Fine. I'm just saying, like, what's wrong with defining it that way, independent of the age, and then saying that's Cambrian, that's Ordovician?
Well,
that's
it's not found that way. I mean, it's not always as nice and neat as you would like it to be. I mean, sometimes there are things in wrong. Jonathan, you had the website the other day of the different things found in supposedly Cambrian rock that just don't fit the theory.
Yeah.
Where was that found, at the list of organisms?
It was Don Batten. He had mentioned over 60 different species of woody plants and other types of plants that were down there in Precambrian and Cambrian.
Can you think of anybody besides him or Carl Baugh that I could look up?
Well, he cites several magazines. I'd have to pull up the article again to give it to you.
Yeah, I actually do want to check into that because, like, that's extremely important.
Now, Don Batten's actually a plant physiologist, and the reason why you're asking for other people is because he's a creationist?
No, it's because he's been so discredited that he doesn't really have any...
He's been so discredited?
Yeah.
Can you give me some examples?
I've read about, basically, falsifications that he's made, and I don't trust people whenever I read stuff like
that. Well, can you give me an example? You're saying he's been so discredited.
Him talking about the degrees that he's earned...
Don Batten, you don't think he has degrees?
No, it's the nature of his degrees that I was reading about that was very disconcerting.
You're sure? Don Batten?
I'm pretty sure. I could be mistaken.
Oh, okay. There's two Don Pattons.
Yeah,
there's a Don Batten.
A T and a B, you know, Paul and Ball, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, there are three that all are creationists.
I believe Don Batten got his from secular universities, though.
But see, if someone gets a degree from a secular university, to me, that would tend to discredit them. I would question anything they say because they got a brainwashing, you know, going through their school. In order to get that degree, they had to learn, you know, swallow this junk and puke it back up on the test. So...
You couldn't say that about creation science?
Well, I know the evolutionists think that the creation schools, the schools that teach creation are not good, and the creationists think the schools that teach evolution are not good. So neither one's going to trust the other, which is why it goes back to, let's just look at the evidence and look at it from a logical, rational perspective and forget where the degree comes from.
Exactly. So let's talk about evidence for creation. Can we do that?
Sure.
Okay. What is the best evidence you have that the world was created in 6 days?
I would say, I don't know about the best evidence. I can give you a list of them. We've got a break here. Hang on. We'll come back after the break. Give me some of those.
Yeah.
All right. Be right back, folks.
You don't have to be very wealthy to want to protect your wealth. I mean, if you got a dime in your pocket, you don't want anybody stealing it, do you? Well, if you have something to protect, you deserve to protect it. And there's a new book out. I can't tell you how many books I've read on this subject, but this one looks to me as though it is going to be at the top of the pile for the rest of my life. It's called Bulletproof Asset Protection, by William S. Reed, Juris Doctor. And this is safe stuff. You can depend upon this fellow to give you the directions for a legal path to follow. All kinds of suggestions. For details, go to www.assetprotectionteam.com or check out this book on the Truth Radio website. Do it right now. Don't delay.
How old is the Earth, anyway? The answer next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor. How old is the Earth? If we rule out scriptural history, we are limited to determining the age of the Earth from appearances. But appearances can be deceptive. Let's say that I wanted to compare the amount of dissolved aluminum in the oceans with the rate at which it is being delivered to the oceans by rivers. Using this method, I could prove that the Earth is only about 100 years old. You would doubt my results if I told you that. I could respond by checking to see how much iron is dissolved in the oceans and how long it would have taken the rivers to deliver it. This time, I can prove that the Earth is 140 years old. And that's one of the problems with trying to work out the age of the Earth without a guide. There is no shortage of information and methods. In fact, there is so much information that you cannot tell the sense from the nonsense. Today, evolutionists say that they know that the Earth is about 4.5 thousand million years old. Back in 1900, they were also sure that the Earth was between 400 and 500 million years old. 50 years before that, they were very sure again that the Earth was between 400,000 and 500,000 years old. In the last two centuries, scientists have been very positive about ages for the Earth that differ by over 1,000%. Does this sound confusing? It is. One cannot help reaping confusion when one rejects what the Bible says, and that's true whether the Bible is talking about salvation or about history.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, call 1-800-42-BIBLE. That's 1-800-422-4253.
folks, welcome back to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. It's July 15th, the last day of the week, and the middle of the month, and day after my 32nd anniversary, where my wife is in Texas. Oh, well, I'll have to see her in a few days. Well, actually about a week when I get over there, hopefully to preach at a church over there in Houston, Texas. If you want to come, we'd love to have you. We're the folks who believe the Bible is true and evolution theory is dumb, and we take calls at 850-479-DINO, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. And we have AOL instant message. We have Jared on the phone. Wanted to know, what was the question again, Jared? How do I know, what's the best evidence the Earth was created in 6 days?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the best evidence would be, of course, an eyewitness observer, that was, i.e., God, who said he did it that way and preserved a book so we can read it. I happen to believe the Bible is God's preserved word. You probably do not believe that, okay?
I don't. And there's no way for me to verify that one way or
the other. You're correct. There's no good way to verify that other than, you know, you can look at, you know, prophecies that are made and then fulfilled, and you can look at changed lives, and there are probably 30 or 40 different common sense tests that would say, you could get those from Evidence That Demands a Verdict by Josh McDowell on different ways to show that the Bible is indeed what it claims it is. You know, the
I
word
actually
is,
have that book.
Yeah, well, you got to read that one. It's good. Okay. Secondly, I would point out ancient cultures by the dozens, if not possibly hundreds, teach this same idea that the Earth was created by some kind of all-wise, you know, fortunately benevolent creator.
But that isn't, but they're not talking about six-day creation.
Well, many of them are.
Which ones?
Oh, I'd have to look that up. Go to creationism.org. That's Paul Abramson, Berkeley graduate website, who collects these stories and keeps them on his website there, creationism.org. Thirdly, I would point out, strictly from a scientific perspective, symbiosis relationships, I think, are really hard to explain without instantaneous or near-instantaneous creation.
Why would those be any harder to explain than any other aspect of biological?
Well, for instance, there are creatures that live in the intestines of the termite.
Right.
The termite cannot live without those little one-celled organisms, and those one-celled organisms are never found outside the intestines of the termite.
Not anymore.
Oh, but they were in the past.
You're right. That's what evolutionary theory would say. It's probably for a similar reason that gluo is broken and wine doesn't matter, because we adapted to a diet that provides vitamin C. So we can't live anymore without vitamin C. You'll get a horrible scurvy. But in the past, it didn't matter.
So, but see, right there, you are jumping from science to religion when it comes to symbiosis relationships and the termite. You're saying, well, it must have lived in the past because, after all, we know it evolved.
We're basically symbiotic with orange trees.
Okay.
Because we can't live without vitamin C, and they use us to spread their seeds.
Correct. There is
same sort of, and I just gave you an extremely plausible explanation for how that relationship could have evolved.
But see, that's where you're not seeing that you're jumping from science to religion mid-sentence.
Why is it religious to say that? It sounds like to me
because
totally
you're giving us a story of how it might have happened. You're not giving me scientific proof that it happened. You're giving me a story, a plausible explanation of how it might have happened, but that's not observable.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, okay? Specific thing is not a falsifiable assertion. But the thing about the gluo being broken in the different, with the mutation rates matching with primates, that is smoking gun evidence, in my view.
Okay, I know it is. Okay, let me just go on here. Symbiosis relationships could be cited probably by the millions.
Sure, of course.
Okay.
No question.
That are absolutely no problem to a creationist. Okay, and probably pose a problem to the evolutionist. I know you don't think it does, but I think a logical person would say, you're right. You know, which evolved first, the tire or the rim to hold the tire, and how did one do any good without the other, you know?
Which one evolved first, glue being broken or the orange trees? Same kind of question.
Well, see, but even the gluon being broken, losing the ability to produce vitamin C is the opposite of what you need for an example for evolution, because that's losing something. That's not gaining something.
It's change.
But it's negative.
Yeah, that particular case is negative.
I know. All the particular cases are negative.
I don't think so.
I know you don't think so. That's why we have this program, because we want to get you won over. But all of the examples are negative. None of them are positive that anybody's ever pointed out. Okay, let me give you...
Martin pointed out the thing with the bacteria and the different genes that replicate and then adapt to different types of diets.
Well, let's
stick
to one thing at a time. Let me give you other reasons why I think six-day creation is the only thing that's logical, and my reasons for it. I said the Bible says so clearly. Number two, ancient cultures teach that. There must be a reason why there are other stories like this. Number three, symbiosis relationships. Number four, slightly related to that, is the gas reciprocation. You know, plants give off oxygen and take in CO2, whereas animals take in oxygen and give off CO2.
Right.
So I think there would be a problem with the mixture of gases, over billions of years. You have to imagine that this somehow maintained this delicate balance. There's a delicate balance between literally thousands of things, like, for instance, the distance the Earth is from the sun. There's only a narrow band in our solar system where life is even possible. There's only a narrow band on this planet where life is possible. I mean, you go up 10 miles or down 10 miles, it's not possible.
Right, and like I would always say, this is called basically the anthropic principle.
Right.
I'd say that there's billions of other solar systems where there aren't people on the phone talking about how the conditions for life are just perfect. Because it didn't happen.
But because we're talking about it, that proves it happened. This
right.
is where your logic
no,
goes.
Disputing that this narrow range exists. I'm
no.
just saying that doesn't mean anything because we have so many examples where it can't
yeah,
happen.
Isn't that, well, for example, if we say everything is so highly tuned, you could, one, say if it wasn't, we wouldn't be talking about it. But
right.
isn't that just like saying, well, maybe there is a chance that someone did design it? It's just as plausible.
Jonathan, I keep saying over and over again, I entertain the possibility of an intelligent designer.
Okay,
all the
I
time.
Was just,
I'm just not
I understand that.
Evidence
I understand.
For it.
Okay. I'm not trying to chop at you. I was just making sure that point
sure.
was out there as well.
Another
of
thing,
course.
Jared, for you to chew on here, of why 6 days is much more logical from a scientific perspective.
Why not 10 days?
Okay, or 10, a short period of time, okay? We'll give it, within a few days. The incredible harmony in nature where everything is 100% recycled. I mean, the Earth, if you looked at it as a recycling organism, is unbelievably efficient. Nothing's wasted. Everything gets recycled. Of course, man is able to manipulate things and produce a few products that are pretty hard to digest by the Earth, and we may indeed mess up this planet with some of the stuff we're producing. But, aside from the modern technology of the last few hundred years, this is an incredibly well-designed, if you want to call it a machine, that is, pretty hard to explain how all this complexity went through these billions of changes and remained 100% efficient the entire time it was making all those changes.
It's incredibly hard to explain if you're demanding every minutia be given. That's for sure. Nobody's claimed this is a simple explanation.
Well, I that's why I point out evolution is a dumb explanation. Now, if you want to believe it, that's fine. I know it's the explanation you've chosen, but it doesn't make common sense to believe that all these complex things have changed over billions of years and at the same time remained symbiotic and remained 100% recyclable. I mean, what if there was a time in the past where there were just too many plants and produced too much, oxygen and, created oxygen toxicity? Or what if there was a time when there weren't enough plants and too many animals and the plants all die because of lack of CO2?
Or what if a certain animal evolved that just destroyed all the other life?
Say that again?
Or what if an animal evolved that just destroyed all the other life? Like us.
Right.
It could happen.
It could happen, sure. The Star Wars. Star Wars, get one man go in there and blow up the whole planet. And
I was just looking at an article in New Scientist, I believe they were saying that, I can't remember, some large geological thing or some large atmospheric factor was changed by bird droppings is what they're thinking now. So, just bird poop. And cause some big problems.
Or the scientist from Indiana that says the dinosaurs killed themselves off by their own flatulence. They farted themselves to oblivion,
That's ridiculous.
I lived,
it sounds ridiculous to me. I don't know.
Well, I lived in a house with a guy that would convince me that there's some plausibility to that.
Could happen, huh?
I've got an older brother that would tear the world up, I think.
Set off the smoke detector.
Yeah, I love him, though. He's, just don't want to sleep.
So, you asked my reasons why I believe six-day creation is logical, I believe, what word you use, but certainly the Bible does teach that. You have to admit that, whether you believe it or not. The Bible does teach it, okay?
No, Ken, I totally agree that's what the Bible teaches, and I'm actually sort of on your side when it comes to defending the integrity of Christianity. When people talk about what Christianity is and what the Bible is, I don't really tolerate people who want to just distort the words of the text to be whatever they want it to be. I hate that. So I at least admire you in that sense for, sticking to your guns.
Well, good. Yeah, we try to, but
I think that you're wrong.
Right, I understand. We try to be consistent, and it bothers me that these people try to blend the two theories and say, well, maybe God used evolution.
It bothers me, too. I disrespect people who do that.
Right. They're on the lunatic fringe for both of us, in my opinion. Okay.
I pretty much agree. Okay, sure. Now, is there anything for creationists that is a problem? Or even in potentiality.
Well, of course, the things that would be way beyond our even possible grasping at this point would be, where could such a creator come from?
Oh, of course, that's a huge ontological problem.
But no, I don't know if it's a problem other than it's a misstating of the question. The question of where does the creator come from assumes he had to come from somewhere. And
I know, you get into philosophical and metaphysical questions here that are really, really slippery, so I hardly ever go that direction because I know what a quagmire that is. But
well, yeah, it does assume the creator is limited by time, in which case he's not God.
Sure, exactly. Okay, so here's somebody pointed out something to me recently that I thought was pretty interesting, and that is, if you're going to take creationism to its extremes, you could suppose that God created the world 10 minutes ago in exactly the form that it's in, with all of our memories pre-built into our brains for us just thinking that we had been living our lives like we think we have been.
That is correct.
It couldn't be the biblical God, though.
Why not?
That would be completely inconsistent with what the Bible says about God and the biblical history according to Scripture.
A God would be a liar then, I guess, right?
Yeah, it couldn't be a biblical God. I mean,
okay. But you see what I'm saying, though, about
it's
just a totally unfalsifiable. That's possible.
Some type of Matrix thing. I know Kung Fu, you know, because they got jabbed in the back of the head with a pencil or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan can push a few buttons on his computer and call up a computer game that has a whole world ready-made that poofs into existence on his screen, you know, where he chases guys around and shoots them down with their ray gun.
Sure.
Halo. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just saying that, like, in some sense, there's really no way to falsify the idea, the root idea of creationism. If it's really coming from a being that can just go poof, there's no way to challenge that idea specifically. The only thing that we could challenge is the specific version of creationism that, you know, you put out. We can challenge on the basis of whether we think these events happen that way or not.
I don't know. Would you admit that there are some people out there who have illnesses that are, you know, chemically caused, who really think they hear voices and they see things and they really think they've created for themselves a whole history that really doesn't even exist?
Or an LSD trip. I mean,
there's people who think that. I mean, have you ever seen Total Recall, where Arnold Schwarzenegger jumped out of a thing and thought that the spies were after him just about 10 minutes because of some change that he actually thought he created for himself, this whole dream?
Right.
So, I mean, and that has nothing to do with a supernatural reality, but still, that could be invoked as some false path that wasn't even there, yet he thinks it is. So it'd be just as impossible to disprove that idea as it was that there was a God.
That explains it. Darwin was on drugs, and he got made up this whole false reality.
His seasick.
I doubt that he was on drugs.
He was seasick from the HMS Beagle, that's what it was.
Let me ask you one question, because we just brought up the idea of challenging specific points about creationism. And in your case, you base much of what you say on the flood, the idea of the Noah's flood story, right?
I believe the story is literally true, okay?
And there's a site called answersincreation.org. Have you ever been there before?
I believe so.
Familiar to me, yeah.
Not familiar. Great time. Maybe tomorrow, Monday, you call in and tell us, are there also multiple views on evolution? And why do each one prove the other one wrong?
Okay, we'll be about a week. But
we'll be back Monday, folks. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
John Quaid is one of the most interesting people I've ever met. A Hollywood actor, John was not content with fame and money, but instead devoted himself. He has devoted years to the study of American history, and particularly the history of the church. He has released a video, Pastors of the American Revolution and the Ideas of Liberty. This is about Jonathan Edwards, John Calvin, Naphtali Daggett, and many of the other pastors who figured heavily in setting up this nation of liberty and freedom. If you would like a copy of this video, your contribution of any size, I mean any size, to Truth Radio, P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444, will bring it to you. That's P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444. Ask for the Quaid video.
Dispatch, this is Delta 15. I pulled over a possible 10-851. White female driving a light blue SUV. Appears very agitated. Please be advised I'm approaching the vehicle now.
Why did you stop me? I didn't do anything. It was that moron up there who pulled in front of me. He didn't even use his turn signal.
Ma'am, please keep your hands in plain sight and hand me your license. Slowly.
Fine. Here.
Mrs. Smith, and your vehicle registration?
What for? I didn't do anything wrong.
Your registration, please.
Oh, hang on. Let me find it. Here.
Oh, I see you own this vehicle.
Of course I own this car. Why did you pull me over?
You have a Jesus is Lord and a WWJD bumper sticker on your car. When I saw you yelling obscenities and such at that other driver, I naturally assumed the car was stolen. My mistake. Have a nice day.
Do people see Jesus in you? A message from Lifeline Productions. 1-800-52-FUNNY at lifelinepro.com.